winter finally came. And we've been real fortunate, as you well know, so far this winter season. And we're due for some inclement weather and some snow, which we have received. Appreciate your presence. We can come together like we are this morning and sing these good songs ably led by Brother John, and approach the throne of God in prayer led by Brother Johnson. We've come together to worship our Creator, our Redeemer, our Maker, our Fortress, our Rock. And we trust that our homage will be accepted by Him. We're to please Him, not necessarily ourselves. But that is the main objective, is to please God in our adoration, our worship. Worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now, for a few minutes this morning, I'm talking to you about an important theme that affects brethren everywhere. And what I'm about to say has nothing to do with anything of a personal nature. It's not cause of anything specifically has happened here in the past. It's something that I feel that we all need to be informed on, to be edified, to be aware of. Because it's become seemingly a crisis. And that is church trouble. Why do we have church trouble? What are the causes of it? And certainly we all realize that we're to live in peace. 1 Thessalonians 5:13 teaches that. Mark 9 verse 50 teaches that. We're to be together in one heart, one soul. We're to walk together, strive together. Be of one mind, one spirit. But that doesn't always take place. It's good and it's pleasant, as the psalmist said, for brethren to dwell together in unity. But I've seen churches in my lifetime go out of existence. I used to preach for one of them years ago that had 200 and better in attendance. Built a fine new building. But sin got in the church. Divorce and remarriage became an issue. And the brethren divided. And then it went from bad to worse. And so they closed down and sold the building finally. And that's true around the country. I know of a church used to have over 300 in attendance. One of the elders told me the other night that they're now down to 120 some or 30. At least they had 122 just a few weeks ago. That's sad. I know of a congregation where they would have 275 down to about 130. I know other churches, however, are thriving, making progress, or growing, or at peace. And what are the causes for these problems and internal strife and dissension? One of them, I believe, is who is going to rule. That's always been a problem. It's a problem among the apostles of Jesus Christ. The sons of Zebedee came to Jesus asking Him to grant them a favor. They looked at the kingdom as being earthly and physical, with positions of authority, would you allow one of us sit on your right hand and the other on your left? Jesus says, not mine to give. An interesting class, our brethren, I think I'm teaching a Bible class. And I hope that's true too. But interesting in Matthew chapter 20 and also Mark 10, but Matthew 20, verse 24, that when the other disciples heard this, they were filled with indignation. And in Mark's account, they were displeased. We all know of Diotrephes, 3 John, verse 9, that he loved to have the preeminence. He wanted to be first. That had to do with rule. Who was going to control? And in congregations, it can be one man, or it can be a woman, or it can be a family, or it can be a clique, as to who's going to rule and control the church, or it might even be the preacher. And that shouldn't be. We're all brethren. We want things to go well, to progress, to move ahead. Years ago, and I'm not going to tell you where the city is, but George DeHoff was preaching there. Brother DeHoff is Murfreesboro, Tennessee now, but this was in Ohio. And they'd built a new building. They'd moved up from another street. And they let Brother DeHoff know that they were the charter members and they were going to have control around here. They'd moved up here from Robinson Avenue. That didn't go very well with Brother DeHoff. You have to know him to appreciate this. But he got in the pulpit one Sunday morning and he says, he had a high-pitched voice, and he said, brethren, he says, you see that spider web? And there was one. They hadn't taken care of the building very well. He says, I came over here yesterday and I spotted that thing and I got a broom and I was going to knock it down, sweep it down. And I got ready to take a swipe at it and a big spider jumped out and ran down the web and said, hold on it, Brother Dolph. I jumped back, he said, startled. Said, that spider said, you can't tear me down. I started talking to the spider. I said, why not? He said, because I moved up here from Robinson Avenue. Well, he made his point. We got to work together. It's not who rules, who controls. Many times this shows itself in various ways. If I'm not in charge, I won't cooperate. I won't work with you. Or I will help you do it the way I want to do it. Or if you do what I want to do, like you buy books, song books, or whatever it may be, I'll work, but I'm not going to work if it's your idea. It has to be my idea. And I've got to be in the lead, or else I'm going to object. Well, this is a problem. It's a real problem that brethren have everywhere and always have had as to who's going to control and who's going to rule. Now, a second problem is binding opinions. This is called untold damage in the church. I don't have a right, brethren, to bind anything that's my opinion or my idea, and neither do you. But I've seen this all through the years, that churches are torn asunder because of opinions being imposed on others. I mentioned Ashland, Kentucky in the class this morning. They've been divided down there, have through the years, over the covering. The preacher who was down there had a daily radio program. He held a meeting over in Ohio. He came back, got on the radio program, and talked about how many were baptized and how many women he got wearing the covering. He equated the covering with baptism. I was up in Michigan some years ago, and the first night of it was a new church, about 90 on Sunday morning in attendance, and things were going well. And this brother was leading the singing. Monday night, meeting began. When he led the singing, he went back to the back. And I really didn't think about not any invitation song being announced. But when I called for it, he came down the aisle, thumbing through his songbook, trying to find one. And to my surprise, he led the "God Be With Us Till We Meet Again." He wanted to be sure that it wasn't an invitation song, so called. And he'd been out on the West Coast, and the brethren out there had taught him that you can't have an invitation song. It's unscriptural. Well, that and a lot of other things at my old Michigan where that took place, there's not any church there today of a conservative nature, because they've torn it up. Because of extreme, absurd ideas that they had. The preacher there was a radical, an extremist. He's now perched on a hill over there in West Virginia with, I don't know whether his wife, I guess she's meeting with him yet. But you can't have a treasury. And those kinds of notions, brethren, and I see this proposed today. Here is brethren and writing in Charles Holt's paper. You can't have a treasury. You can't have songbooks. You can't sing certain songs, and certainly we shouldn't sing unscriptural songs. But here's the brother I mentioned a while ago who came from out in Nevada who had his songbook stamped. The preacher out there said, "You can't use these. Do not use." We've had all kinds of these notions, ideas through the years, and it divided the church. We got one going now down in Kentucky. Brethren are saying that if you have communion on Sunday night, everybody has to partake of it. Just can't have it for one or two or three. Everybody has to eat it. That's an opinion. And then you'll have the kind of clothes that can be worn. Out in Arizona or out in the Southwest, a preacher was opposed to a woman wearing slacks. He came up to a brother, who was a gospel preacher. He said, "Brother Ford," he said, "what do you think about a woman wearing pajamas?" Well, he said, "I really never given that any thought." He said, "What do you think about it?" He said, "I'm against it." He said, "How come?" He said, "Because they got legs in them." Well, Brother Ford said, "I thought a woman had legs." And he was trying to be consistent anyway, that since a woman couldn't wear slacks, she couldn't wear pajamas. She had to wear a nightgown. This hurts. This divides. This tears up the church. We got enough to preach that's in the book. We need to focus our attention on our real mission, is to seek and save the lost. And when we quit doing that, brethren, we become idle and we turn on one another and we begin to magnify things and make mountains out of molehills till we self-destruct. Cecil Willis made this observation years ago. And he said what concerned him after the division over institutionalism and centralized control, where you got sponsoring churches. He said that the church will splinter itself to death. And it has in some places. Instead of reconciling our problems, and many of them are over minuscule things or over personality clashes. Instead of reconciling those, we take a group off, go down the street and start a new church. And I can think of a place or two right now, they've just splintered the church to death. And they got groups all over town. Good-sized metropolitan area. All over the area. All over town. That groups are meeting because brethren couldn't get along together. And I've always wondered, as some have observed, if we can't get along here, how in the world are we going to get along in heaven? Then there's the unbridled tongue. Somebody said, well, you just as well say it as to think it. Now, that isn't so. Words hurt. Abrasive things sting. We may think it, but what we think, nobody else can know. And I remember what Solomon said in Proverbs 29, verse 11. That the fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. There's some things I shouldn't say. When I say it, I can't retrieve them. I can't get them back. And so I need to weigh them and I need to evaluate them. You know, James deals extensively with the tongue, not only in James 3, but the whole book he deals with the tongue. And in James 3, verse 5, he talks about what a great matter a little fire kindleth. Wars have been fought because of the tongue. Churches have been divided because of the tongue. And you ever notice that when a congregation has problems and it's resolved, how many will come confessing that I said things that I ought not say? At least most of them do, if they want to do right. I said some things I shouldn't have said. We say it because of the moment. We're out of control. We say it without thinking. James 1:26 talks about vain religion. James 1:26 says, a man seemeth to be religious. That is, he appears to be religious. And notice this, and controls not his tongue. This man's religion is in vain. It's empty. It's not real. It's not genuine. It's like an empty wagon, you know. It makes a lot of noise. There was a plaque which said, dear Lord, help me today to keep my big mouth shut. That's not easy to do. And I've said things in years gone by that I wish I'd never said. And probably you have too. But you know this gender strife, and it throws fuel on the flame. And we can control our tongue and not speak, but be swift to hear, but slow to speak, as James in chapter 1 teaches. It'll do a whole lot in contributing to peace and tranquility in a congregation. Then you also have unscrupulous preachers. Now, brethren, a lot of our church trouble can be laid at the feet of preachers, I'm sorry to say. Instead of being men of peace, preaching the gospel of peace, a lot of them are antagonistic, a lot of them are agitators, a lot of them are filled with pride, and they want to dominate, and they want to rule, they want to control, and they try to manipulate elders. Here was one who took an elder out on a ride that I want to talk to. He picked him up, and he was trying to get him convinced to his position so he could pit him against the other elders and get his way. Here's a man, brethren, right now who's been asked to resign. Been there for several years. And he refuses to resign. And the brethren are between a rock and a hard place. How do you deal with that? If the preacher wanted to do right, unless it was over principle, unless it was over truth, then you ought to resign. Let me tell you and be frank about it. It is stupid for a preacher to want to hold on to something and cause the church a lot of trouble, a lot of problems and dissension and division. It's crazy. But what are they going to do? Now, preacher, you know, he can politic. And that's what a lot of them do, and that is beneath the dignity of a gospel preacher, to politic. And he goes out and he gets this one, and here's some ignorant person, here's some weak person, doesn't know, but oh, how I love him, you know. He's so nice. And so here's this woman, this kid, and that kid. And so they bring them in the equation, and here's some brethren who have the knowledge, and some women who have the knowledge, and so forth. And so they have a standoff, you know. And what are they going to do? They don't want to divide the church. Church's not very big the way it is. And so here they are. He says, I'm not going to leave. Here are preachers also who are indiscreet. Their action, their behavior, their conduct, their demeanor is unbecoming as a gospel preacher or for a Christian. Here's a preacher who takes everything, you know, he wants to stay on, and he's going to see to it that he does, and so he maneuvers so that he can get the church to keep him. Here's a place down in Tennessee several years ago where the man had been there 8 or 9 years, and the elders said, Andy said, we want you to leave. We think it's been here long enough. We think we need a change. And in that meeting, he seemed to agree to it. But then he took it to the church. The church was good size. The church was 350 or so. And so he took it to the church. He said, I'm being asked to leave. And he, of course, the preacher, you know, he knows how to milk. And so here he's. Tears he could pull to Jimmy Swaggart. Preachers sometimes use this tactic, and so I'm being persecuted. I'm a martyr, and so he could shed tears. Well, that turned into a fiasco on Sunday morning. Here came the women, and they were crying, and they were embracing him. Oh, you can't go. You know what happened? That church divided right down the middle. And half of them went with the preacher and started another congregation in town. That shouldn't have happened, brethren. What could he have done? He could come out there like a man. And he could have respected the wishes of those elders. They are elders. They hired him to come. And bless your heart, they have the right to tell him to go. It's kind of strange that elders are so magnificent when they hire the preacher, and they're nothing but scum when they fire him. Or just ask him to go because they think they need a change. They have that right. Some of our problems because of unscrupulous preachers. Now another thing is a lack of leadership. Leaders are most important in a church to coordinate things, to stimulate, to provoke, or to elicit. Elders are to be out front, and elders are ones who should have rapport with people. They're the ones who should communicate with the congregation. And I've seen it, brethren, in years past where the elders were on one channel and the church on another. And the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. The church was never given any information. They didn't know anything about the finances. They didn't know anything about what preachers were being supported. They didn't know who was coming for a gospel meeting until a week or two ahead. They never consulted with the church when they hired a preacher. They just hired them on their own and didn't ask who the brethren preferred. And that's a mistake. It reminds me of down in Georgia, and this is probably a fictitious story. But here came a fellow along, and he came in this little community. It was about like Plains, Georgia, I guess. And he went to the store, and he said, "Did you see a group of people come through here a while ago?" And the proprietor said, "Why, yes." And they went through about 30 minutes ago. He said, "Oh, my." He said, "I better hurry and catch up with them." He says, "I was their leader." Now, they've gone off and left their leader. Elders don't need to be led. They need to lead. And so we need leadership. And when there's not communication, and when there's not motivation, and when the elders are perceived to be lazy, and maybe they are, and ill-tempered, and sometimes they're self-willed, and they're contentious, and they're partial, then we're asking for trouble. I've seen churches that had problems because of an inefficient eldership, and that shouldn't be, brethren. We need to work together. Elders need to respect the congregation, and the congregation to esteem and respect elders. And we need communication, rapport, and we need to know what we're doing. Members of the church need to help elders. Members of the church need to tell elders some things instead of them playing the game of hide and go seek. You know, sometimes brethren hide and it's difficult to seek them. It's hard to find where they are. It's difficult to know what's going on. But a lack of leadership contributes in many places, or at least in some places, maybe not many, but in some places, internal problems. And that can be eliminated. Another thing is a contentious disposition. Now, some of us just love to fuss. We're not satisfied if things are going well. We got issue-itis. We always have to have something like this going, and we're miserable unless there's a fight. And I've seen brethren in business meetings say things that seem like just get it going. I like this contention. I like this controversy. And I've seen it in Bible classes. And a preacher needs to control a Bible class where those kinds of things don't get out of hand. And here's a brother who gets off on a tangent, and he has a hobby, and he always is introducing it. It's just like not very long ago. Here was a brother, and he happened to be an elder, by the way, who had this notion that if a man's wife dies and he remarries, that he can't be an elder in the church because he's got two wives. So he's a bigamist. And brethren, if he's a bigamist, what's he doing in fellowship of the church to start with? He's not a bigamist. He's only got one wife. And when that first one died, as though she never existed from the standpoint of this marriage bond, that's loose, no longer bound, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39. But he says he can't be an elder. Well, it's causing trouble. Now, I don't know whether this would fit in this category or not, whether it be a contentious spirit, but we got brethren who always want something going. Back years ago, there was a brother who thought that in the observing the Lord's Supper, the one who presided had to give the thanks. Because he said that Jesus, when he instituted the supper, he gave the thanks, and since I'm presiding, I've got to give the thanks. Well, in the first place, I told this fella that you're not Jesus. I don't know whether he believed that or not, but he wasn't Jesus. In fact, it became such an issue that I had to spend, and we had our worship before our Bible study, and had worship at 9 and then Bible study at 10. And so it was such an issue that I preached right on through the Bible study. And we got that thing solved. It had to be solved. It became a bone of contention. But there was always something this brother was introduced. There was another fellow in this area, in this part of the country, who'd been every church in the county. And he had a problem. And he said, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John aren't part of the gospel. They're not part of the new covenant. They're not part of the law of Christ. Well, I said, Paul, I said, why is it that you refuse to call a priest father? I said, where is that? I said, isn't that Matthew 23, verse 9? He didn't know what to say then. But the next day, I was in the office and the phone rang. It was Paul. He said, well then? He said, I've got the answer. I said, where is it? He said, 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 6. There's only one God and Father. I said, Paul, that doesn't say anything about calling a priest father. Here was this man who had these ideas, and he was always creating problems, causing trouble. And I told him, I said, you're going to lose every child you've got, and he had four or five children. And he moved out from there when we wouldn't agree with him, and he went to another congregation. And seemingly, I said, now this is about the last one you're going to be able to go to unless you quit, start your own. And it seemed like he settled down after he got there. But we always got people who seem to be contentious and just love to have something going, an uproar. And I'll tell you, brethren, you get an uproar going in the church, you've got every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the church who will come back on Sunday night to see how the fight goes. I guarantee you that. You can't get them out, save your life. If something positive and good is talked about, but you got a fight going and they all come. And you'll have the strays coming in that haven't been there for 6 months. And they're going to take sides. And you get a vote and we get them all to come in to a meeting, which is preposterous, by the way. And we get them to come in. They're on the book, but they haven't been there in 3 or 4 months. And we get them to come in and they vote. And that's not right. That's not right. That's devilish to deal with things like that, that way. The Lord has told us how to take care of problems, and that's not the way, that's not on his agenda. Well, then we got to the problem. I know a church had 175 or 80 in attendance. Brethren, they got in a fuss and a fight over interest on the money. And they were going to build a building. This is an old building, and they'd outgrown it, and they were going to build a building. And the brother had died and left his inheritance. And it was several thousands of dollars. And he wanted to give it to the church, which he did. And so they had all this money and they had it in interest. And so they got in a fuss about the interest, whether it's scriptural or whether it wasn't. And they couldn't decide on the building, whether they wanted to build an auditorium and hook this old building onto it as classrooms or just go totally with the new one, classrooms and all. And so it was back and forth. We couldn't decide. I told the preacher, I said, you better do something quick. Better do it quick. Build something quick. Well, they didn't. And so they split. And now that church is down to about 40-some people in attendance. And I want to tell you, brethren, this is all over the country. Things like this. Why couldn't they agree on the interest? I believe it's scriptural. I believe it's good stewardship. Now, some brethren disagreed, and we were going to cause a lot of trouble, and we couldn't get worked out. Well, I want to tell you, the good of the church is more important than a few dollars on interest. I'll tell you that right now. We need to try to work it out, but I know of a congregation won't take interest, and they won't take one dime of interest. It's a good group of people. I'm not going to cause trouble over that. I believe you can take interest. But if they didn't believe it, if I were a preacher there, I'm not going to push it to the division of that church. I know churches that don't believe in having a wedding in the building. I preached for one some years ago. I didn't push it. I believe you can. But they didn't believe you ought to. And so it makes no difference. Tweedledee, Tweedledum, go down the street and get married. I think it's permissible. But now I'm going to push it to the division of the church. And brethren, that's what happened. We're going to have this wedding in the building. We're going to draw this interest regardless. And so we got conflict. How are we going to resolve it? We're going to resolve it on the basis of what's good for the cause of Jesus Christ. And we're going to back up and not have our way in everything. We also cause trouble by meddling in other people's business. Some of us have long noses. We're nosy. There's some things aren't any of my business whatsoever. And we want to know about it. We want to know about all of the marital problems and the details about it and all of those things. And I grant that sometimes when we're dealing with the marriage issue, we have to delve in some things that may be unpleasant. Elders may have to do that. If no elders, some brethren may have to do that to find out or ascertain the truth. But Peter said in 1 Peter 4, verse 15, that we're not to be busybodies. And Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 11 that we're to mind our own business. Here's an interesting statement in Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 3. He says, it is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. And so they're meddlers, and it can cause trouble and dissension in the church. And then there's a lack of discipline. I'm just about through. There's a lack of discipline. Somebody said, well, we'll get it next time. No, we better get it this time. If in the church there are troublemakers and false teachers and contentious brethren, they're keeping everything in uproar, that needs to be dealt with pronto. Now, I believe this, brethren, it's easier said than is done. Because sometimes you try to deal with an issue and you've got more problems and you've got people who come to the defense of the troublemaker. And so, what do we do? But I believe this. I believe that if we would deal with issues and problems as they arise in an initial stage, in a proper way, and at first in private, we could work out and avoid a lot of our difficulties. Why should a church let a man or a woman just tear it up? Why would you let a person to be an individual who circulates false rumors or who has a grudge against somebody and takes it her venom and spite out on that person? Why not get into a meeting and say, we need to correct this? We let things go and they just get bigger and bigger and bigger until they become uncontrollable, and we choose up sides. If it were taken care of in the initial stage, we wouldn't be bothered, most likely, with a lot of these problems. And then brethren need to know, if I'm the guilty one, I'm going to have to give an answer, and I'm going to be responsible to somebody, and we're not going to tolerate it. And brethren, if we have in our mind that this isn't going to be tolerated, you see, sometimes we're like children. Just how much can we get by with? How far can I go? Nobody's going to tell me what I can do. If we'd handle that in this very outset, I want to tell you right now, and I've been at it for 40 years, I'll tell you right now, we wouldn't experience a lot of the difficulties that we do in the church if troublemakers, false teachers, in the very outset, were dealt with forthrightly as the Bible teaches. Well, I've talked long enough. What's your cure for this? Basically, our cure is love. Now, love is a four-letter word that's used rather loosely. But love is really a concern for the good of another. You know, love worketh no ill will to its neighbor in Romans 13, verse 10. Paul said to the Thessalonians that you'd increase and abound in love. If I remember right, I think that's about chapter 3 of 1 Thessalonians, verse 12. Everything we're to do is to be done with love. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 14. Love will hide a multitude of sins. Love, brethren. And then we need to neutralize the things that cause problems. And what I mentioned this morning are those things that need to be neutralized, need to be corrected. And then we can have harmony and peace in the church of our Lord Jesus Christ. If you're in the audience this morning and you're not a child of God, as we sing this song, we want you to come and give God your heart. We sing the song, "Give Me Thine Heart." That's what the Lord asks. He doesn't want mechanical response. He doesn't want something that's just stereotype. He wants our heart. Serve Him with our heart. Obey from the heart. The day when you come and be washed in the blood of the Lamb, cleansed from every sin, made holy and pure. God will forgive.